Hello, everyone out there in Cooperative Radio Land. It's 8 o'clock in Vancouver. It's Tuesday, and it's time for Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Tonight we have with us in the studio Julia Meir-McLeod and Jeremy Murphy, and they are directors of the Sustainability Solutions Group. It's a worker co-op of diverse disciplines, personalities, cultures, and expertise working on the sustainability challenges faced by communities and organizations, reading off their website, of course. And Julia came to SSG as a green building consultant. She contributes to projects including community and corporate energy and emissions planning, climate action planning, sustainability management, and policy analysis, and much more. Jeremy is an urban planner and sustainability specialist, and Jeremy also co-founded and is a director of Hive Vancouver, Vancouver's social impact co-working space. We recently had them on the show back, I believe, in October last year, or maybe it was September. It's gone so fast. But here we are in 2016, and they have recently returned from Paris, and we're stoked to have them in the studio tonight. Thanks for coming in on short notice here.
Yeah, thanks for having us again.
So one of the things that we talked about last time, and I also read on your website, this has kind of resonated with me. From your website, it says, "We understand sustainability as an ongoing process rather than a static outcome." This is something that that kind of, you know, like I say, resonated with me. It's something that I think is a bit of a shift in some people's thinking about sustainability. They see it as a something to achieve, but it's not. Why do you guys frame it like that?
Well, yeah, I think you said it very well. I think that the previous understanding of sustainability is, you know, as long as we do better than we're doing now, then we've achieved sustainability. And now we have recycling bins in all of our offices or buildings or on the street, and so we're doing pretty well. And that's, of course, not the case. Sustainability is an ongoing process, and there is always more sustainability to achieve. It's not a goal that you can just achieve and then kind of rest on your laurels and do nothing more.
And so we're looking tonight at the Paris climate talks. This is something that I really like, even though I've read a bunch of news articles and it all sounds like some stuff happened there. I don't really have a concept of what exactly went on. Can you maybe just sort of set it up a little bit, like just like describe what are the Paris climate talks?
Yeah, the reason why you might still be confused is because it is an entirely overwhelming process. It is a gigantic conference of 35,000 attendees. It's a complicated legal process that involves delegations from different countries. It involves not-for-profit agencies. It involves civil society. And you have all of these articles and press releases coming out of all of those entities and more, kind of describing different takes on the talks. So it's overwhelming for everybody, whether you're not there or whether you are in attendance. But the Paris talks were COP21 was the title. So the Conference of Parties, the 21st meeting, the Conference of Parties. And it's the 21st annual meeting since the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change was established in the Earth Summit in Rio in 1992. It came into force in 1994, so we've been meeting annually every year since then with parties, which are typically nations and other nation representatives like the EU. So they've met 21 times under that framework, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is a framework that kind of guides a process, and it enables policies and agreements. So things like the Kyoto Protocol was one of the meetings, the COP meetings, which resulted in an agreement. Things like Cancun meeting in 2010 brought some important legal implements to this process. So every year there's one of these check-ins, and it's to see the progress on the original framework. And the importance of it is that the original framework dictated that the signatories, the countries, would establish targets for greenhouse gas emissions reductions. And that's what they've been attempting to put into legally binding targets and frameworks ever since.
And so how successful has this been? I constantly hear murmurs that, Kyoto is a joke and that everybody's not living up to these. Where are we? Was there any progress in Paris?
Sure. So, yeah, that's totally understandable. I mean, and it's because with every meeting, there are different iterations and there are different issues at hand. So Kyoto was actually, for the most part, a very good framework, I feel. Unfortunately, there were these kind of escape clauses in it, which Canada used. So, shortly after the ratification period, Canada actually pulled out of the Kyoto Protocol, and it was not legally binding in the end for Canada, and it kind of sabotaged the entire process. So there have been improvements on that process, and in Paris, improvements were made on that, so that it's not as easy to kind of sabotage it or make it meaningless.
Okay, so I do want to come back to talking about what the outcomes of Paris were, and try and get a sense of what the future might hold. But before we do, I want to find out why SSG was there. Why was Sustainability Solutions Group there in Paris, and why did they want to attend?
Okay, so I can answer that question. There were several reasons why we wanted to go to Paris. The first one was to launch the latest version of an energy and emissions planning tool for cities that we developed called City Insight, which we got to do there. The second was to lobby the Canadian government to put forward an ambitious and just agreement as part of the Canadian delegation. We also went just to be on top of what's happening in this field, and in particular, the impacts of the discussions on local governments who we work with. Another reason was just to connect with other people who are doing similar work to us and or who potentially would like to. And finally, as part of and in collaboration with the International Cooperative Alliance, we were there to put forward their position on sustainability and to push the recognition of cooperatives in the text and negotiations.
Wow, you guys covered a lot of ground. So maybe we can start with the City Insight, City and Town Modeling project, the tool that you guys developed. What exactly does this, what does this tool offer?
Well, it's a lot of things, I would say. It's a tool that we've been working on for several years and going through several versions of it. So this one, this new version, what's exciting about it is that it includes an online platform which allows cities to look more deeply into what their emissions are and where they are coming from, as well as spatially. So not only sort of what sort of fuel sources they're using or sort of what fuels are coming or what emissions, sorry, are coming from transportation versus buildings, but also where in the city those are occurring. So that's sort of tool is part of it's what we use when we work with cities on their sustainability plans. And it's exciting because cities as well as just citizens can have a deeper look into what's going on in that regard.
And so is this a free tool for people to like use, or do you offer as a service, or how does that work?
I would say a bit of both. In order to put together the inventory, we would be working alongside a city, but the tool itself is open source. It's offered under a Creative Commons license. So we hand that over to the city and they can continue to use it.
Neat. And is it an ongoing, we were just talking about how sustainability is an ongoing process. This isn't something that you kind of, is this something you sort of check in regularly, or is the tool something you use as an ongoing monitoring process?
Yeah, it's both again. So, you can kind of set up your initial inventory, like your accounting of all your different sources. You can make scenarios and say, this will happen if we choose these directions and make these actions, or this will happen if we do otherwise. And you can set up scenarios and choose your own adventure, I guess. And then Yeah, you can use it ongoingly. So, you know, if you have an annual review or a biannual review, you can check into the model, put in the data that you've collected over that period, and see where you're at with reference to your targets that you've set.
Neat. Have you guys run this tool on Vancouver?
No, we haven't run it on the city of Vancouver, but we have run it on a lot of other municipalities in BC. So we've done North Couchin, which was an award-winning project that we did. We've done Haida Gwaii. We've done various cities or towns in the Fraser Valley and beyond.
Neat. I imagine it's not an easy thing to just sort of drop your numbers in there. But
No, it's true. A lot of data collection has to occur.
Okay. Now, Julia, you also mentioned you guys were there to lobby the Canadian government to have just and ambitious goals for the project. And also staying on top of that discussion, what does that look like? How was your reception of you guys being there and showing that type of support?
Well, that is done in a few different ways. It's interesting the way the conference is set up. There's sort of different areas which different people have access to. So there's one that is just, it's open to civil society, and we all had access to that, and we're able to take part in and participate in the talks that were happening there. There's another area called the Blue Zone, and that's where media representatives and delegation members have access to. So some of our members had access via the media route, and we also had a member who was part of the Canadian delegation and had access to a portion of the conference that within that Blue Zone that others weren't able to access. So sort of by witnessing these different the conference at these different levels, we were able to kind of basically observe what sort of priorities were being put forward and interface with different party members on that level.
And how would you sort of summarize Canada's involvement in the talks?
Well, one thing that was exciting, like we saw our environment minister, Catherine McKenna, get brought into a mediation role. And that was the first time, I believe, in 10 years that a Canadian was asked to do that. So that was quite exciting. It was interesting just to see Canada being mentioned from what I've heard. Just way more than they ever had been with our new government in place, and that they were supporting another thing that was exciting: human rights to be included in the text. So we just basically overall we're hearing Canada just being present and participating far more than they have been in ages.
Yes, that is good to hear. You also mentioned the International Cooperative Alliance and their agenda and basically also being there and being a face for cooperatives. What is the ICA's agenda with respect to climate talks and to the Paris Accords?
Yeah, I think the ICA agenda is fairly recent, actually, when it comes to climate change. It's kind of inherently recognized in the past that the cooperative principles kind of embrace sustainability. It's never been kind of explicitly stated in so many words about cooperative participation in climate action, for example. We did a project with the ICA a couple of years ago, which kind of established the state of sustainability amongst co-ops worldwide. We did these polls of dozens and dozens of co-ops all over the world and dozens of types of co-ops. And established that, yes, a lot of the co-ops in their promotions and in their literature and in their events have a great love of sustainability and talk about it a lot. But in fact, when it came to whether or not they were walking that talk, it wasn't as prevalent in their walk. So then it became kind of more of a topic for the ICA and its members, and we are kind of tasked to a certain extent with carrying that torch. And so it was part of our duty going to Paris to kind of bring that into the limelight and make cooperatives part of that discussion.
And didn't the ICA put out a statement about sustainability prior to the conference?
Yeah, there was, as happens with a lot of different not-for-profits and organizations, prior to the conference, they make their stance or their demands, as it were, known. And ICA did put out a statement on sustainability and climate change urging heads of states to have a fair and ambitious agreement.
So before we get into talking about outcomes and stuff like that, I did want to also ask about, it sounded like you guys also had some fun there with this Pathway to Paris concert that your team was actually partners in putting on. Can you tell us about this, how the reception was for this concert series?
Sure. I mean, I think we mentioned in our interview in the fall that one of our directors, Rebecca Foon, is a bit of a rock star cellist, and so she has musician networks and networks of networks. So she was able to take a lead role in coordinating two concerts, and the format was essentially a climate change speaker, a renowned climate change speaker, followed by a renowned musical act, followed by a climate change speaker, followed by a renowned musical act. And so we had speakers like Bill McKibben from 350.org and Naomi Klein, Vandana Shiva, among others. And we had musicians like Tenzin Shogol from Tibet, and Tom York from Radiohead was there, and Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers was there, and of course Patti Smith was there, and so you know, they all played their own things, and they all played together, and it was a sold-out event both nights.
That's wild. You guys are connected.
Yeah.
How did that play into your goals for your time there? I mean, clearly you're providing some entertainment, but and educating people at the same time. Did you see that translated into anything tangible that you could see?
I would say yes. I mean, more on a personal level, or maybe for us as a team, it was, and also from what I heard from others who'd attended, that it was really an encouraging and inspiring sort of event amongst these talks, which can be seemingly quite dry or dragged on. It was really nice to have sort of to bring people together and use the arts as a way of inspiring people towards positive change.
Yeah, and a lot of the work that we do involves public engagement, and this was kind of like the next level of public engagement for us, where we really got to test some of the limits that we had come up against in previous projects, you know, having a new breadth, having a new network of people to tap into. And as Julia says, the outcome was really positive. We were trending on social media for a couple of days because Tom York played some new Radiohead songs that no one had ever heard before. So it was quite exciting to the Radiohead following.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry I missed it. It sounds like a pretty awesome concert, and some of the pictures I was seeing on your website look pretty phenomenal. Looks like a good time. I did want to try and get a sense from you guys as well. Again, like, I'm kind of pleading ignorance here because I don't feel like I really have my finger on the pulse of the international sustainability community / what the heck is going on between countries. So what was your impression of the outcomes of these talks in Paris?
Yeah, so overall, I'd agree with the general consensus that the talks were really successful in that they were able to actually come to an agreement, which after 21 years is quite a feat that we've seen of just having all these countries come to an agreement on how to reduce emissions, as well as include mechanisms to what they call ratchet up or revise and improve upon these goals every 5 years, and that's to start in 2018. Another success was the agreement to have developed countries contribute $100 billion annually by 2020 to developing countries to help them in their efforts. But one thing is that this amounts to actually less than 8% of military spending.
That's
yearly.
Depressing.
Yeah, which is a little depressing. And I think speaks to the fact that, you know, we need to get a lot further, and we have the ability to go a lot further than we have. Another thing that struck me actually was outside of the talks themselves. And that was sort of the level of contribution that we, you know, unprecedented that we've seen from what they call non-state actors. So that's sort of like banks, institutions, businesses, investors, civil society organizations, as well as the first pledges that we've seen from subnational governments, like cities and provinces.
Okay. And so out of the agreement, are we seeing established targets that are actually achievable and people can actually committing to achieving them?
Yeah, so what they've included in the agreement is this sort of 2-degree goal that we need to sort of avoid what we call catastrophic climate change. And so that goal is included there. And basically what they're using is what they call intended nationally determined contributions. So each country puts together, you know, their contribution of emissions reductions. And that was presented by the nations at these talks. The thing is, right now, those amount to about 2.7 degrees of warming. So those have yet to be sort of decreased as part of these every 5-year revisions. Countries have agreed to kind of revise and improve upon. So we're not quite there yet, but the sort of the framework's in place to get there, I guess.
Okay, Jeremy, you had mentioned that Canada kind of had escape clauses from the Kyoto Protocol. Do you see any of these readily available to countries that might want to get out?
Well, I think that there's probably always escape clauses available if you look for them hard enough. And, you know, if you want to do that and be issued by other countries, you can, although it's inadvisable, I feel. They've kind of changed the ratification process this time around. So instead of requiring consensual ratification for all parties this time, it's like a tipping point of ratification. So it's 55 parties who produce over 55% of global emissions must ratify for it to come into force. And that coming into force period is mid-April of this year.
Okay. So how optimistic are you guys?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I think that, as Julia says, the process was really the key success of the Paris Agreement. The outcomes, you know, have their highlights and have their good parts, but I think it's pretty widely recognized that it is not enough to do what is needed to avoid catastrophic climate change at this point. I mean, we'll see when the ratification comes in. We'll see when countries put up their targets and their tracking mechanisms and that sort of thing. But, you know, given what we've attempted in the past and how it's been, you know, responsibility has been avoided, you know, we don't necessarily have an optimistic outlook. But I feel like, you know, nations are one level of government and one party, and then subnations are another. And as we've seen in Canada over the past 10 years, it's the subnational parties, the provinces, the local governments, the regional governments, the municipalities that are really making the progress in this area. It wasn't the federal government, right? So it was everybody else who had to do something. So I have a lot of confidence in that and the headway that we're making with those parties. And I have a lot of confidence in some of the trends that we're starting to see, which even a couple of years ago seemed crazy, but now are totally becoming mainstream. So cities adopting the 100% renewable energy target, for example, getting off of fossil fuels, the divestment movement to get all entities to divest their investments in fossil fuel industries and reinvest them in renewable energy or green jobs or something like that. So I see these trends that are kind of coming into the mainstream that are very hopeful.
And how does the downturn in sort of the Albertan tar sands economy look in your sort of national view of sustainability?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing because, I mean, obviously that's been responsible for not very much of Canada's GDP as was told to us. The opposite was told to us, right? But has been responsible for a great amount of Canada's emissions, both in producing it and using it locally or, you know, nationally and exporting it for use. So the decrease in production from the tar sands is a good thing in terms of Canada's emissions. And there's always a concern about jobs and, you know, if the tar sands decreases production, what happens to those people? They're going to go on unemployment and they're going to be poor. And that, of course, is a possibility. But with the uprising in sustainable energy, renewable energy technologies, and their widespread application, there is an obvious opportunity for people to shift their employment from one sector to another and, you know, get retrained, have a more enjoyable job, I feel, than working in the middle of nowhere in the frozen tundra of northern Alberta, perhaps, or Hibernia off of Newfoundland, you know, producing, installing, you know, solar panels or geothermal systems or what have you in more safe environments.
Well, we're running out of time here. I just really appreciate you guys coming in and educating us about the Paris climate talks and how all this crazy, large, complex process works, and sharing with us your story of your experience there. That's awesome.
Yeah, anytime.
Thanks for having us.
And one sort of last thought. It sounds like I'm really encouraged as well by this idea of non-state actors getting involved, and really what the picture you're painting is a more ground up approach, hopefully supported at that international level. So thank you. I really appreciate you guys coming in. If you want to find out more about the Sustainability Solutions Group, check out their website. It is ssg.coop. That's it for us here at Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. If you want to check out our website, it's eachforall.coop. The email is ideas@eachforall.coop. If you have any story ideas, co-ops to tell us about, or if you just have any questions, you can always tweet us at Each for All, and have a cooperative evening.